Welcome to the Business Coach Podcast, an advice-oriented series that tackles the top issues and opportunities facing Canada's small businesses. I'm your host, Ian Portsmouth, the editor of Profit Magazine, and we've developed this podcast in cooperation with BMO, Bank of Montreal. Although cloud is one of the hottest buzzwords in business and technology, the concept of cloud computing has been around for well more than a decade. In fact, you might have been in the cloud for years without even knowing it. That's because web-based email services like the ubiquitous Hotmail are cloud computing applications. Why is the cloud so hot today? Among small business owners and the companies that serve them, cloud computing represents a chance to do away with a lot of expensive IT infrastructure and access the latest and greatest applications on a shoestring budget. But as with any hot new technology, there are myths and misconceptions about doing business in the cloud. Joining me to help set the record straight and suggest ways to put the cloud to work in your business is David Senf, Director of the Infrastructure Solutions Group at IDC Canada in Toronto. David, welcome to the Business Coach Podcast.
Thanks for the invite.
So, David, it makes sense to start with your definition of cloud computing and what it actually replaces in a company's existing IT setup.
For sure. And like you're saying, I mean, cloud is not new. What's new is the degree to which we're accepting cloud. Because of the consumerization of IT, the amount of use of Hotmail, Gmail, Facebook, and our ability to gain access to applications very quickly is really driving a renewed sense of using online platforms to be able to deliver on business needs. To be considered as cloud, we basically look at three things, right? It should be a shared multi-tenant environment, it should be self-service, and it should be elastic in terms of usage and billing. And I know that sounds really kind of theoretical, and basically we use it to separate out cloud from other forms of delivery models for IT. And there's many different forms, right? We're familiar with outsourcing and managed services, traditional IT delivery model, and private cloud as well, which I don't think we'll get into much today. But certainly it's important to distinguish between those different models because each model provides an organization with different constraints but also different benefits.
Now, what are the three types of cloud-based services? I know there's software as a service, there's infrastructure as a service, and platform as a service. Can you just very briefly tell us which each one of those is and maybe provide an example that our audience might be familiar with?
So software as a service is the most readily understood area of cloud computing. And software as a service contains a number of different business types of applications. So, for example, CRM and Salesforce.com would be a dominant player in that. ERP, which includes human capital management, which includes financial applications. For example, Canada's own FreshBooks would be an example in that bucket. Office productivity. So, for example, Google Docs and spreadsheets and Office 365 from Microsoft. There's a range of software as a service. Then we have, as you mentioned, platform as a service and infrastructure as a service. And those are really geared more towards the IT side of the house. Platform as a service is kind of interesting. It's an area where I expect high growth, but it's really kind of low today in terms of adoption in Canada. And that would be characterized by things like Microsoft's Azure, Salesforce's Force.com, Amazon's EC2 are in that area. And then finally, infrastructure as a service is where you're going to be running large compute applications or storing data. And again, that's more of an IT-centric area is the infrastructure as a service and platform as a service.
So generally, platform as a service is sort of the software infrastructure that allows software developers to develop their software more quickly or more affordably. Is that right?
Whether they're a software developer who's building an application for many businesses to use, so they're an independent software vendor, ISV, and we see a lot of that happening today, whether they're another cloud provider and they want to, use cloud infrastructure to spin up their own application for use by businesses, or whether they're a developer in a large business and they're running test configurations of their own applications, platform as a service absolutely is where you can run applications in the cloud. And I really think that's going to be a hot area moving forward.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the payment models. Are these typically sold on a per-user basis? Are there monthly fees that are corporate-wide accounts? How does it work?
So software as a service mimics what we've expected from traditional software, We buy a license for an individual, so it's on a individual basis, on a per desktop basis, or however you want to look at that. But it's basically on a user basis. And platform as a service and infrastructure as a service are different from that software as a service model insofar as you're using capacity. So I'm spinning up X number of virtual machines in a platform as a service environment, and I pay by the virtual machine, or I pay by the amount of storage that I'm using in the cloud, or I'm paying by how much I'm uploading or downloading from the cloud. So software as a service has a very straightforward user-based, how many users use that service, and you pay a monthly fee. Platform as a service, infrastructure as a service is really more of a capacity usage billing model.
Now, on that note, perhaps the most popular perception of cloud computing is that it's cheaper than traditional software or hardware purchases. Is that necessarily true?
That's a yes and no answer. Let's say you wanted to store some company videos that you had shot up in the cloud versus, you know, going to your local computer store to buy a terabyte drive. There's no question. It's going to be cheaper to buy the terabyte drive. It's going to be cheaper to go to your local store. Similarly, if you were to compare buying an off-the-shelf license for, you know, a prepackaged DVD that you use to load up software on your PC or on your server, odds are if you're going to take a 3-5 year lifespan of that software, it's going to be cheaper to run that locally. What you need to look at, though, is not just the cost of the license, not just the cost of that raw capacity, but what's all the other things around it that you get from cloud that you otherwise don't get internally or that you have to pay for. And that's the comparative total cost of ownership, right? So I look at how much I need to spend on server, storage, networking, labor, and all the other things that go into total cost of ownership. And then I also need to look at the external factors and the things that I get in addition to, not just the things I take away, but the things I get. So, for example, security. You get added security typically in the cloud. You get the ability to, you know, access your application anywhere and a number of other benefits that come with that. So putting a cost on that or putting an actual quantitative metric on that can be challenging. So what I would say is that cloud, if you compare it on a license-to-license basis or a capacity-to-capacity basis, is not going to be cheaper than doing it internally. But if you take your total cost of ownership approach, then you're going to see that cloud makes more sense.
Another benefit is that you're always working with the most recent version of the software if you are working with software as a service. And a couple of other benefits maybe you can discuss are agility, in that you're not really tied to one system. It's easier to divorce your cloud computing provider than it is to go out and buy new software or new hardware. And secondly, mobility, especially in the software as a service space, you can access cloud-based computing systems pretty much wherever you have an internet connection. Would you agree that those are big benefits?
You know, when you look at the number one concern that organizations have with their own IT department today, their challenge is the ability for it to adapt or to change, right? That they're not getting the latest technology. In fact, we ran a larger study that looked at a number of different areas and had the IT versus the line of business rate the IT department, and we found that the number one gap between IT and business is IT's ability to provide the latest technology. So absolutely, by using cloud, you're getting the latest version of software. It's updated for you. It's not something that you have to go out and do yourself. The intersection, as you're pointing out, of cloud and mobility is large. To be able to access applications remotely in a way that you can't today if you're using traditional on-prem software is very limiting to companies. To be able to access things remotely makes a large difference to them. So I would say absolutely, agility is the number one benefit that organizations cite with respect to cloud. And how we position that is, you know, time to deploy. I can get something immediately, and I can serve the need that I have right now. And again, I think that's the number one reason for using cloud.
David, you mentioned security as a benefit of cloud computing, and yet surveys show that a substantial percentage of business owners and executives are not jumping into the cloud due to security concerns. Are those fears justified?
No, I think by and large, Canadian organizations are less secure than cloud providers are. You won't find in Canadian organizations for the most part, SAS 70 compliance. Now, SAS 70 compliance is something you could pick apart a little bit, and then I select the controls that get audited. But I can say, too, that most organizations are not 27001 certified. They're not using all of the vulnerability management and testing that you would find in a cloud provider in Canadian organizations. So I think it's a false assumption to think that the cloud is less secure than the average organization is. It's one of the areas that I see typically happen in technology, right? So new technology comes about or a new delivery model comes about, and security is the number one concern because we're unfamiliar with it.
So overstated, but would you at least admit that there is some risk? We have had a lot of high-profile instances recently of major organizations like Sony PlayStation having their systems hacked and having customer data stolen.
Sure. So a cloud provider does wind up bringing together and pooling together more and more and more customer data. So does that become more and more attractive to the criminal element? Yes, yes it does. So from that perspective, the cloud provider themselves really needs to have their defenses shored up and needs to have security staff on site 24/7 who are monitoring and looking out for these types of attacks, you know, at whatever layer in the security stack they might be targeting. But you look at, again, the number of leaks that you can see coming from Canadian companies continually. Look at datalossdb.org, and you'll see just a continued stream of data loss from myriad sources from web applications that are left open and exposed in Canadian companies. So, again, I would just assert that, yes, there's always a risk of an incident happening, but cloud providers, by and large, are more secure than Canadian organizations are.
Now, security brings me to the idea of the service level agreement. So this is essentially, in layman's terms, the contract that you sign with a cloud provider. What should a business owner look for in one, or perhaps on the contrary, what should they be afraid of if they see it in their service level agreement?
Yeah, service level agreements, it's a great area to focus on because I think the attention by and large goes towards security and compliance and Patriot Act and things like that, whereas I think organizations should be spending a lot more time focused on their SLAs with their cloud providers and focused on the terms and conditions that are in their contract. So things like, you know, archiving of their data, how often is that going to happen, how often are backups going to happen, what about recovery, if there is an outage, what happens there. I would say the two fundamental things to look for in an SLA are mean time between failure. So what's the uptime that they're going to guarantee? And then what's the mean time to repair? And how quickly do they say they're going to bring the systems back online? Then you look at, you know, the compensation models around the SLA, and those vary drastically between the different cloud providers. So you really need to get a handle on what that looks like. Because, for example, in the case of Amazon, they do a rolling 12-month average. So even if in a single month the outage was far greater than the SLA, it's a rolling average. So, you know, for that entire year, they may still very well be within their rights to not compensate you. So you look at it very carefully. But again, I would say focus on those two areas of mean time to repair, mean time between failure.
And I guess given the business model of cloud computing providers, you can't really negotiate the terms. You have to take their standard SLA. And if you don't like it, then you have to start shopping around. Is that right?
It depends on the size of the company, both in terms of the user of the cloud and then the cloud provider themselves. So I have seen organizations negotiate and discuss with Amazon. I've seen organizations negotiate and discuss their SLAs with smaller providers and have had those terms and conditions changed. In fact, I've had organizations say, you know, here's our security policy. We need you to follow this. We need you to live up to this. And the cloud provider, who today are looking to onboard as many customers as they can, are willing to look more deeply at satisfying those requirements. Now, to your point, cloud is more about volume and low margin. If you want things that are, you know, a service that's more customized, then you're looking at a hosting model. And those still exist. So that you can get email in the cloud, or you can get, hosted Exchange, for example. And that provider is going to customize that more for you. They're going to give you more customized SLAs. And so there's going to be more in place for you as a particular specific business than you're going to get out of cloud. So, in that case, look at different types of delivery models if the cloud provider is not going to live up to your SLA, or shop around and look for the SLA that best suits you. But at this stage of the game, there is still some room for negotiation, again, depending on your size of company and depending on the cloud provider themselves.
That's good to know. David, I want to thank you for joining the Business Coach podcast.
A lot of fun. Thank you.
David Senth is the Director of the Infrastructure Solutions Group at IDC Canada in Toronto. That's it for this episode of the Business Coach podcast. Be sure to check out other episodes, which you can download from BMO.com/coach, ProfitGuide.com, and iTunes. For other tools to help you build your business, visit the BMO Smart Steps for Business community at BMO.com/smartbusinessowners. Until next time, I'm Ian Portsmouth, the editor of Profit Magazine, wishing you continued success.